This is Phil Farron. And I am driving to my mother-in-law's. I'm not driving home today. It's Thursday. We're going to take a quick trip. One of Lynette's aunts passed away, and we're heading for the funeral. So I came in a little early today, get my hours in, leave it a little early. We're taking off. Gotta go there, spend the night, then we'll head back tomorrow. So this is gonna be quick. Wait, I've turned the wrong direction. I need to go back the other way. So this is gonna be quick, but it'll give everyone a chance to see relatives and like that and like that and like that, and that's good. And in fact, this was, this particular one has kind of hit my beloved a little harder than some of the others. It's this particular aunt, had been an aunt who had come into the family late through a marriage, and really a very, very sweet person. And while her death was not unexpected because of some physical difficulties she was having, it's been a little bit of a shock. So we're gonna go pay homage to her and then head back in. But that means that my normal drive here is a little shorter because my beloved is already heading this direction from home, and we're gonna go. All is well. We're ramping up for Valentine's Day. I still have a few things to do on that, so I'm actually behind schedule because normally I like to have everything squared away about 2 weeks ahead of time so I can have time for tweaking, but that is not happening this time because it's actually a week from tomorrow, but I think it'll be fine. It is doable at this point. I have all of the pieces in place to make it doable. What I'm trying to do now is finish up making a pair of gloves, and then I have to make some frou-frou things to make it more Victorian looking, but you know what? It's all gonna get done. I woke up to the realization, last night, I thought, you know what? It's February. This is going to be the last month before I'm supposed to be done with book 12, getting it roughed in. And it's going fine. I think I'm gonna be fine on that, as long as the book doesn't go long. But I think I'm on track for it. I'm somewhere around chapter 24. We usually go to 30 chapters, and I think we're good there. So we'll see. I think I know how much I have left and where it needs to go, and like that and like that. I think I have an idea for the epilogue. We'll see. Anyways, this is an interesting time in this series of books because this is book 12, so this is one of the hinge points. So by the time we get to book 12 and get to the end of book 12, then, you know, we kind of should be pointed in a new direction. Got it started in book 11, and, you know, now we'll see. Anyways, don't have much time, so gotta talk. This week I came across an article, and kind of in keeping with the whole general philosophy of the three waves of science, that our observations lead us to believe things aren't very complex. First wave, second wave, more observations, more detailed observations lead us to believe that things are that complex, therefore God is intimidating, therefore God must not exist. And then third wave being that our continued observations, detailed observations, lead us to see that the complexity that we live in is staggering. And once we bridge into that third wave and we see that the complexity is staggering, then at that point, we have to decide where we're going to go from there. And I came across an article called An Existential Crisis in Neuroscience. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. It's by a guy who is working on his, he's about to defend his doctoral thesis. And I found it was interesting. He is trying to answer the question of how the visual parts of the rat brain correspond to movement. And so with that, took a bunch of measurements. He said he's got some computer servers. They're holding 48 terabytes. 48 terabytes of data. And he's trying to sift through this data and look through it and try to figure out what in the world is going on in these rats' brains. He said, printed on paper, the data set would fill 116 billion pages. Double spaced. So he said, you know, the description of these experiments that I wanted to do is pretty easy. It fills like 2 pages. But then you start collecting this idea and trying to make sense of it. And that's where things kind of go off the rails. And he talks about the fact that neuroscientists have made considerable progress towards understanding brain architecture and certain aspects of brain function. He said, you know, we can identify the regions roughly that respond to the environment, activate our senses, generate movement and emotions. But we don't know how the different parts of the brain interact with and depend on each other. We don't understand how their interactions contribute to behavior, perception, or memory. So technology has made it easy for us to gather behemoth data sets, but I'm not sure understanding the brain has kept pace with the size of the data sets. Because he's trying, this poor guy has all this data and he's trying to figure out, what does it mean? So he said, there is another approach, and I've mentioned this on the podcast, but it's been a long time. There is another approach called connectomics. I think that's the way you say that. If not, it's close enough. And what connectomics is trying to do is it's trying to map the entirety, the connectome, the entirety of the connections inside any given brain. So they want to go through every single neuron and see how every single neuron is connected to every single other neuron. This is an enormous task. Truly enormous task. He says, the question of how we might begin to grasp the entirety of the organ that generates our minds has been pressing me for a while. Like most neuroscientists, I've had to cultivate 2 clashing ideas. Striving to understand the brain and knowing that that's likely an impossible task. So he meanders over to the office of a fellow scientist who has been working on this connectome stuff. And he said he asked them about the field of connectomics and whether he thinks we'll ever have a holistic understanding of the brain. And that's how I just said, no. And so the questions that are hanging out there is, how do you make sense of all this gargantuan volumes of data? Where does science end and personal interpretation begin? Were humans even capable of weaving today, weaving today's realms of information into a holistic picture. He goes on to describe packing of neurons in the brains, and he says that the way neurons are packed in the brain would make canned sardines look like they have a highly evolved sense of personal space. So, and this is what this connectomics is proving over and over. Sometimes when you see pictures of a neuron, it looks like this beautiful tree. One neuron. Looks like this beautiful tree structure, but what you don't realize is that tree has been isolated out, and it's like a forest where the trees are all packed tightly, completely tightly against each other, and all the branches are growing and weaving around each other, and there is no space between them. It is completely filled with stuff. Oh, Nana's here. It looks like she's ready to go. How's it going, Nana? How's it going?
It's just going fine.
Good. Nets, yeah. I think, is on her way. I'm just going to finish up recording my podcast, and then we'll get stuff loaded.
Okay. Or if you need to come in.
No, we'll be all right. I'll just get the podcast finished, and then I'll come in.
Okay,
cool. Okay, that's Nana. She's Lynette's mom. Everything is packed in. I mean, it's just jammed packed with all these neurons, and they're all intertwining. They're communicating with each other. There's hundreds of connections between these neurons. And the way scientists do this, I talked about this when I was talking about connectome before, is they make these little tiny slices of brain tissue, and then they dye them, and then now they use artificial intelligence to figure out where the boundaries are and then put all these slices together so they can build these gorgeous, gorgeous pictures. But just because you have all these pictures doesn't necessarily mean anything. Because that still doesn't tell you what's going on. And the numbers are just the numbers. One of the things they talk about in this article is that a complete wiring diagram for a mouse brain alone is estimated to take up to 2 exabytes. That's 2 billion gigabytes. And he says, for comparison, the estimates of the data footprint of all the books ever written come out to less than 100 terabytes, or 0.005% of a mouse brain. But people are still trying to map it. And that, you know, this is the human spirit. You know, we're going to go forward. It's interesting because this scientist who's working on this connectome, he says, I think the word understanding, will we ever understand the brain? I think the word understanding has to undergo an evolution. Lichtman says, as we sat around his desk, most of us know what we mean when we say, I understand something. It makes sense to us. We can hold the idea in our heads. We can explain it with language, but if I ask you, do you understand New York City, you would probably respond, what do you mean? There's all this complexity. If you can't understand New York City, it's not because you can't get access to the data. It's just there's so much going on at the same time. That's what a human brain is. It's millions of things happening simultaneously among different types of cells, neuromodulators, genetic components, things from the outside. There's no point when you can suddenly say, I understand the brain, just as you couldn't say, I now get New York City. So it's really interesting to see the grappling of it. And at one point, the writer of the article says, maybe human brains aren't equipped to understand themselves. And the scientist that he's talking to says, and maybe there's something fundamental about that idea that no machine can have an output more sophisticated than itself. What a car does is trivial compared to its engineering. What a human brain does is trivial compared to its engineering. Now, engineering is a very interesting word to use there. The scientist goes on to say, which is the great irony here? We have this false belief there's nothing in the universe that humans can't understand because we have infinite intelligence. But if I ask you if your dog can understand something you say, you'd respond, well, my dog's brain is small. And to which the scientist would respond, well, your brain is only a little bigger. So why suddenly are you able to understand everything? So the writer of the article says, so, you know, does this scientist, is he daunted by what a connectome might achieve, a mapping of all the neurons? Does he see his efforts as Sisyphean? In other words, he's never going to get to the top of the hill. It's just the opposite, he said. I thought at this point we would be far less along. Right now we're working on a cortical slab of human brain where every synapse is identified automatically. Every connection of every nerve cell is identified. It's amazing. To say I understand it would be ridiculous, but it's an extraordinary piece of data, and it's beautiful. From a technical standpoint, you can really see how the cells are connected together. I didn't think that was possible. So we're making progress, okay? We're making progress. We're seeing how things are connected, but does that mean that we understand it? And the answer is no. There's an interesting spot in here where, and I've got to go, so I got to wrap this up. There's an interesting spot in here where they mention something that I had mentioned before. And that is, there had been a prevailing idea that neural networks, deep neural networks, which have made so many advances in artificial intelligence, that they were based sort of on the model of the human brain, and that's why they were able to make all these advances, that a neuron is basically one node in this deep neural network, and so it sort of works that way. But the article goes on to say, yet a masterly deep neural network still doesn't grant us a holistic understanding of the human brain. That point was driven home to me last year at a computational and systems neuroscience conference, a meeting of the who's who in neuroscience, which took place outside Lisbon, Portugal. In a hotel ballroom, I listened to a talk by Arash Afraz, a 40-something neuroscientist at the National Institute of Mental Health in Bethesda, Maryland. The model neurons, from what apparently this guy said, the model neurons in deep neural networks are to real neurons what stick figures are to people. And the way they're connected is equally as sketchy, he suggests. Alfrez pointed out that the model neurons in deep neural networks are not real neurons, and the connections among them are not real either. So he kind of displayed a jumble of box. He says, in contrast to this dizzying heap of connections in real brains, deep neural networks typically connect different brain areas in a simple chain, one layer to another. But another scientist has gone on to say a strong intuition among many neuroscientists is that individual neurons are exquisitely complicated. In other words, they're nothing like their corresponding nodes in deep neural networks. Going back to the article. They have all of these back-propagating action potentials. They have dendritic compartments that are independent. They have all these different channels there. We're talking about a single neuron. Single neuron. And so a single neuron might even itself be a network. And we talked about this several months ago. To caricature that as a rectified linear unit, the simple mathematical model of a neuron in deep neural networks, is clearly missing out on so much. And this was a couple of months ago when we talked about this in the article, that there was an article that came up to the point where it said, we talk about the fact that we have, you know, whatever it is, 100 billion neurons, something like that. And so people have said, oh, well, that's like a deep neural network where there's 100 billion nodes. And some are saying, no, that's not quite right. That in fact, the brain in its complexity is not a 100 billion node deep neural network, but in fact, each of those neurons may be their own multi-node, 100, 200, whatever, 1,000-node neural network. So what you really have in the human brain is you have 100 billion neural networks that are all hooked together doing different things. And somehow it all works together. And somehow we don't all just go crazy. Somehow. Many of us, not all of us, many of us maintain a balance that could be classified as quasi-sane, at least. It's a really fascinating thing. It's really a fascinating thing. That when we start digging down into the complexities, we suddenly realize that maybe we're just not quite as smart as we think we are. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it to my mother-in-law's. And we're going to have a wonderful weekend because we're going to go honor a life that was a life of service and beauty and gentleness and kindness. And I'm looking forward to it. Have a great weekend.